Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Battleground 44 with me, Saul David. Today I'm talking to Claire Mulley, the award-winning historian whose books include The Woman Who Saved Children, The Spy Who Loved, and The Women Who Flew for Hitler. Her latest book, out on the 16th of May, is the remarkable story of Agent Zoe. Claire, welcome to the Battleground podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. It's great to be here.
Now, I think we can all agree, our listeners included, that far too many books about war in general and the Second World War in particular are dominated by male characters. And you've made it your business to bring to light the important stories of women like the person we're going to be discussing today. And please correct me on my pronunciation, because Roger Moorhouse has picked me up many times, particularly with Polish characters like this one. So Elżbieta Zawacka.
Elżbieta Zawacka. Just call her Zoe.
Zoe. Okay. Before we talk about what she was up to in 1944, which is the whole point of this series of the podcast, tell me a little bit about her backstory. When and where was she born and brought up? And what was she doing when war broke out in 1939?
Yeah, she does have an amazing backstory and front story. She was born in a small Polish town called Toruń, which is in the northeast of Poland. And that part of Poland, when she was born, wasn't actually Poland, because she was born in 1909, and that part of Poland was then part of the German-Prussian Empire. And so it was actually illegal in her town for her to speak Polish. The Polish language, Polish culture was completely subjugated, and she even had to be called by the Germanized version of her name. So instead of Elżbieta, she was Liza. And in a sense, actually, she was brought up until the age of 11, when at the end of the First World War, Poland regained their freedom after 120 plus years of occupation and annexation. She finally became a Polish citizen of her country, of her heritage. She'd always been taught inside by her parents that she was really Polish. She was a real, you know, even more intense patriot because of this. But in fact, the fact that she spoke absolutely fluent German, that she knew all the German customs inside out and back to front, you know, in a sense, Liza was her first ever alias. And this became very useful for her, of course, in the Second World War when she starts her work as a courier and an intelligence officer.
Okay, so right at the beginning of the war, you say she's got this, you know, this kind of fierce patriotism. But of course, the war doesn't go well for the Poles. We've got the Germans coming in on one side on the 1st of September. And then ultimately, as a result of the, you know, the dastardly pact with the Russians are going to come in the other way. And Poland is split down the middle. Just tell me a little bit about what she's up to in the early weeks of the war.
Well, even before the war, it's important to say that she was a member of the Polish Women's Auxiliary, which were, they were volunteers, they were a uniformed group, but they weren't officially part of the Polish armed forces, but they were very highly trained. And she was an instructor in there, so she's a pretty senior commander in this PWK Women's Military Training Body. And so she and her unit are sent off, they're deployed to go to Lviv. Lviv becomes incredibly important very quickly in September 1939, because as you say, initially, Poland is invaded from the west by the Nazi German forces, but just 17 days later, they're invaded by the east by the Soviet forces coming in as well. And they come claiming to be trying to protect Russian heritage citizens, but really they are, of course, party to this secret pre-war pact with Nazi Germany. And so Poland actually held out better than is often thought in the first sort of 2 weeks of the war, but they cannot continue to fight successfully on two different fronts. And so they decide to get most of their armed forces, and in fact, their government and their treasury and very important people like the men who first broke the Enigma codes and worked on the Enigma machine, with whom actually Zoe had studied maths at university before the war. But anyhow, they want to get them all out to regroup in France. So the Polish army overseas becomes one of the key strategic military partners very early on in the war. And to get out, they want to go through, most of them want to go through Lviv into Romania and then into France. And so Zoe is part of this group. Initially, she is helping to support the anti-aircraft positions. She's setting up, helping to dig trenches to stop tanks. And she's working, making what they call petrol bombs. Of course, they're Molotov cocktails, but they're not going to give them the Russian name, of course. And so she's working, you know, very hands-on in the front line right from the start. And then we have a witness, actually, which is Colin Gubbins, the head of SOE. He comes through. He was on a British military mission in Poland at the start of the war, before the war. And he gets out through this route and he sees and later writes about seeing all these men, women and children, you know, ripping up the paving slabs to help make barricades. And one of those women was Zoe. So she was working to keep that route open to get the armed forces out.
Yeah, I mean, Gubbins is going to come back into the story, isn't he? But before that, she doesn't take that escape route. You've spoken about the route down through Romania. She stays in Poland and joins the Polish resistance, or the Polish Home Army, as it's become, as you say in the book, a sort of homely name for actually what was an incredibly dangerous role to play. Tell me a little bit about what she gets up to in the Polish Home Army.
That's right. Well, she, before the end of 1939, she manages to get across the immediate wartime border between the Soviet and the German part, which takes quite a lot of ingenuity on her behalf, gets a few of the women back across. And before the end of the month, she's actually taking her oath of allegiance in a freezing Warsaw kitchen. And she's had to get rid of her uniform pretty sharpish. And she's now, you know, in a skirt and blouse and joining the resistance movement. And at first she joined, there were a lot of these independent fledgling resistance groups, but they come together, brought together by a brilliant leader called Stefan Rawiecki, whose code name is Grot, which means arrowhead. So he brings them together into this force called the Home Army. And of course, it's called the Home Army because they are fighting at home. They're the domestic resistance force, as opposed to the armed forces I mentioned earlier, who had gone to fight, to continue the fight overseas. But it is a hugely appropriate name because there are a lot of them are actually fighting from their homes. I mean, I think the key thing with Poland is, in Britain, when we think about the front line, we're usually thinking overseas. In Poland, immediately, the home front was the front line and women joined the fight. You know, they come out, you know, in the countryside, in the farms, they come out in the cities, in their apartments, they're fighting for their families, for their homes, they're fighting for their country. So the Home Army really is, it's a legitimate army. It gains recognition only in 1944, actually, but it's always set up as an official army as far as the Poles are concerned and the Polish government in exile. And so she is serving, and her first role she undertakes is she goes up to Silesia and sets up an intelligence network, hugely important. A large amount of Britain's Churchill, in 1945, in May, he actually did a survey to find out how much information, about 48% of information from Europe came from Poland. And so Zoe sets up very early on an intelligence network, but she's using all women. So these are largely her former military or women's auxiliary contacts, but they've now got all sorts of different jobs. So it's women who are acting as translators and secretaries in the German occupational authorities' offices who are having a look at all the paperwork and having interesting conversations. Or it's women working in the bakeries or in the laundries who are seeing the changing bread order for the garrison, or what uniforms are coming in to be washed and how many and where they're being sent. Or people whose apartments or worker place looks over railway tracks or main thoroughfares, and they're seeing the troop movements. So all of these women come together and coordinate a very successful intelligence network. But none of that information is useful, of course, unless it can get back to the Allies, to the Polish government, which is now exiled overseas, first in Angers in France, and then later on, of course, when France falls, they come to London. And Zoe becomes one of the most important couriers, bringing this information hidden in all sorts of, again, domestic items. We have still the back of a clothes brush that she used, one of many objects she used, but we've still got that one that you can slide the back out. It's so fun. Keys, where you would take, you know, the shaft of a door key would come out and she could wrap microfilm around it, and cigarette lighters, all sorts of things. And she is smuggling that information. But because she has this very useful background, because she was raised as a German girl, and she is put on one of the most dangerous routes, one of the most audacious routes, which is bringing military intelligence right into Berlin, the heart of the Nazi Third Reich. She has various false papers, and one of them is as a secretary in an oil company. Oil is, of course, strategic war industry, so that gives her a bit more flexibility. So you can travel across wartime borders with that. And she will bring information in to Berlin, where a friendly embassy would then send it in the diplomatic post. And although it seems absolutely ridiculous, it was one of the most dangerous, but also one of the fastest ways to get this information back to the West. So she's doing that and smuggling back money and all sorts of things as well. She said she stopped counting when she crossed borders 100 times.
Ridiculously dangerous work. And it's really hard to offer any criticism of Zoe at all, Claire, but you are honest enough in the book to point out that later, possibly after the war, some of the women who were working with her said they felt pressured by her into carrying out this dangerous work. So I wondered if she ever gave a justification for putting people in what was obviously pretty dangerous circumstances.
I think they recognise her, but I'm not sure she ever recognised that she did that. I mean, I absolutely adore her character. She is taking no prisoners at all, and she's not going to be taken prisoner either. Thank you very much. And so she just believes that everyone who works alongside her, especially if they've been in that pre-war women's military auxiliary, but she's networking with everyone, that they must be motivated by the same powerful force that compels her. And a lot of these people were men and women. You know, I've interviewed a lot of veterans from Poland, and one of the women told me that, you know, we sucked in our patriotism with our mother's milk. I mean, you have to remember that Poland had had this 120 years of being cut up by three rival empires around it, you know, occupied, subjugated, forced to fight in the First World War in three different armies, sometimes fighting themselves, you know, each other. But this generation, those generations, she has really vivid memories of her country gaining its freedom. And she is not going to let it go back on her watch. You know, she is determined to fight for her country. And a lot of people took huge risks because of this sort of, it's in their DNA to fight for the freedom of their nation. But not everyone. And so she does, you know, I do have some wonderful accounts of the women. She calls them all her friends, and I'm not sure they all saw it like that. So, yes, saying, you know, she just sort of swept them up. It was always a fait accompli, you will do this. And occasionally, sometimes they put their foot down. And so she ends up last minute, she'll be the one, okay, I'll take the cash in the large blocks. It's more difficult. And that her friend goes over the green border with a smaller microfilm. She takes the cash and nearly gets caught several times, but always manages to either talk, blag her way out of things, or climb out of a window. I mean, she's close to death many times, but she doesn't seem to worry about putting other people in that situation. She felt it was a shared honour.
Okay, and the let's talk a little bit about the name, because I think she gets it when she begins this courier work to Berlin, which arguably is the most dangerous work she undertakes. Where does the name come from?
I'm not sure it is the most dangerous, but yeah. So the name is the name of two women who she truly loved. And the first of them is a woman. They're both, it's actually Zo. In Poland, you'd say Zo. It's short for Zofia. And one was the woman who married her elder brother, who was in the Polish armed forces. And unfortunately, he had died of pneumonia, in fact, as he was being deployed just before the war. And Zofia, his wife, had seen him at his hospital, knew he was unconscious, he wasn't going to make it, and just took his, you know, his personal items with her and left. But then the medical staff heard a gunshot from one of the toilets, and she had killed herself with her husband's gun. And she just couldn't face life without him. And Zo also adored her father and felt a real respect for this woman. So that was one of them. And the other is her dearest friend in the PWK from before the war, in the women's military auxiliary, who was another Zofia. And she sadly had been killed very early on in the war in an appalling train crash, which Zo felt was just before the war. And she thought this was when the Germans were actually doing lots of false flag operations into Poland, trying to change public opinion, trying to galvanize things and make it justify their invasion of Poland, if you like. I mean, this sort of thing we can all recognize happening still today. And she thought that it was German sabotage that had caused this train crash. So in using these names and giving herself the code name Zo or Zo, she is honouring the memory of these women that she loved. She's keeping them with her, but she's also remembering women's service and women's commitment as well.
Now, when you do publicity for the book, when it comes out in April, Claire, you're going to struggle to get everyone to call it Agent Zo, I'm afraid. I think that there's going to be a lot of Agent Zo. So we're going to have to go with that. Tell us a little bit about how dangerous it was. I mean, she narrowly avoids death on multiple occasions. You say one of the most serious is when part of her network is rolled up and her sister is arrested. She is, you know, comes within, you know, inches of being captured by the Gestapo, manages to evade their clutches. This, of course, is the beginning of the process of which is going to lead her to move into Western Europe and then the UK. And we'll come on to that in a second. But just give us a quick resume of what happens when she's almost taken in 1942.
I don't think I can tell you all the stories, but I mean, this is a remarkable moment. And there's this incredible moment, actually, where her sister Clara, her younger sister, and they're very close. They've been serving together. She has been arrested and the Gestapo are waiting in Clara's flat. And Zo arrives late at night with a suitcase full of illegal money she's just brought in from Berlin, throws a pebble up to the window, but it clatters down and the light doesn't go on. She's pretty lucky at this point. And it's only when she climbs the staircase and knocks on the flat below the neighbours that they say the Gestapo's there. So I just have this moment where the two of them are thinking about each other. You know, we know that we know exactly where Clara is in the basement of this building in Warsaw. We know exactly where Zoe is. And you just imagine if thoughts could meet, there they are. But Zoe knows that there's no point in trying to storm that building. She's not going to be able to get her sister out. What she needs to do is spread a warning that there's been a leak. And so she has this extraordinary day jumping on and off trams, going to various cities. She knows she's got this tale. She's trying to shake them off. Eventually, she feels she's shaken them off as she gets a very late train back to Warsaw, having stowed that suitcase of money. So that's all taken care of and issued some warnings. So she's on this train and the Gestapo are there following her, and she has to leap from a moving train. I'm not going to give you the whole lot, but it really is remarkable.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? Okay, that's enough for part one. Do join us in part two when we hear the extraordinary story of how Agent Zoe escapes across occupied Europe and into Britain. Welcome back. Okay, so we're compressing the story horribly, but we feel we've got to finally get to the events of 44. But there is quite a lot going on before she gets there. And she joins what is one of the most extraordinary groups that I'd never heard of, although sort of technically it's part of SOE and the Colin Gubbins organization, called the Silent Unseen. Tell me a bit about that, how it began and how she came to become its only female member.
Yeah, I mean, they are this incredible group. It's ironic, so few people have heard of them when they're called the Silent Unseen, of course. But at the start of the war, I mentioned the Polish armed forces coming south through Romania. They went to France. They regrouped there. Of course, they served in the Battle of France. And then as France falls, they come out, mostly not through Dunkirk. A few do come that way, but also from ports further along. And they regroup in Britain and they're sent up to Scotland. And they, Sikorsky, in September 1940, he decides that we will have this group. It's actually been suggested by one of these soldiers of an elite special force, sort of paramilitary paratroopers. So I think about 2,400 volunteer from the forces up in Scotland. Of those, the top 800, the cream of them, are selected. And they go through this incredibly rigorous training. It's very much like the SOE training. 579 pass through that. And 316 of them will eventually be parachuted back behind enemy lines into Poland and some others as well. They also go to France and Yugoslavia and elsewhere as well. But of that 316, there is just one woman. And that, of course, is Zoe. So she obviously didn't come out that route. She's already been serving in doing this courier work in occupied Europe. But after her, I mean, in 1943, they have this terrible betrayal and she knows she's burnt on those routes. The Gestapo have her name, her face, her correct details. They've arrested her entire family at this point. And so she is, but she's too good to waste. So they send her, she becomes the only female emissary. So an emissary is a courier plus acting in place of a commander-in-chief of an army. So she is representing the commander of the Polish Home Army. And she's the only female one sent with special microfilm over about 1,000 miles of occupied territory. And that itself, that's a whole chapter, Saul. But, you know, shot out in the Pyrenees, all sorts going on. And she gets to Britain on May Day 43. Yeah, so she gets to Britain. She undertakes these two missions. And then she becomes the only woman. Because they say it when she's done her missions, they say, well, thank you very much. You've been absolutely amazing. You know, would you like to live in Scotland or do you want a cocktail in London? You know, she's like, what are you talking about? You know, I've got to go back. And they said, well, you can't, I'm afraid, because the only way we can send you back is by parachute. And obviously, you're a woman. She's like, okay, when's the next parachute training? So she becomes the only woman. They did train a few in parachute training, actually, but she's the only one that's deployed back behind enemy lines by parachute. So, yeah.
Yeah, and she's trained at Ringway, which, you know, my forthcoming book, Sky Warriors, you know, they start up in Ringway, I think in 41, and enormous number of people go through Ringway. I mean, of course, initially it's the parachute battalions or the people who are going to join the parachute battalions, but ultimately all kinds of characters go up there, you know, including SOE. So ultimately she does that. It sounds horrendous, doesn't it? Those early training jumps with not a huge amount of preparatory training. She doesn't find it a very comfortable experience, does she?
She actually hates it, actually. I mean, she doesn't like to talk about being scared, and she doesn't often, but occasionally you get bits of conversations reported by other members of the Chico Cemli or the Home Army. So, well, this this is the thing that she was really terrified. She was always scared of heights. Jumping from the plane, from the train didn't help that. But, you know, she's more determined than she is scared. She's always more determined to succeed. So they start off in Scotland with a sort of tower. Looks a bit, it's metal. It looks a bit like a telephone pylon, really. They have to jump from that. And she doesn't break her ankles, but she has to have them bound up. You know, she twists them. It's all pretty rough. I looked at the training reports in a Polish archive in London, and it's extraordinary just the numbers of people who break their legs, break arms, you know, just too terrified, can't do it, including some of the, you know, very senior leaders of the Polish armed forces. So it is absolutely horrendous. But and then they have these flights from Ringway, which is now Manchester Airport, that's right, going out over a lake, and then their parachute to be on. Apparently everyone is silent on the bus as they go there, but everyone's laughing and joking on the way back. So
yeah. I mean, most people listening to this, if they've got any image at all of parachuting, it'll probably be Arnhem, for example, where they're jumping out of Dakotas. And this happens latterly, but of course, in the early stages of the war, of course, I go into all the details about how completely unsuited the equipment is for jumping, and they're using converted bombers, basically. So in the case of Zoe and a lot of other paratroopers, they jump out of Halifaxes, literally a hole in the fuselage. I mean, ridiculously inefficient way to get out of a plane, and also quite dangerous. You could hit your face on the side of the hole as you went through. But
there are stories of fatalities of people whose static line didn't come off, or who are just sucked behind the plane and are killed, or, you know. So, I mean, there are horrendous stories which they would have heard of before they had to jump through this hole in the fuselage. But yeah.
Yeah, so she's as brave as a lion, as we know. I mean, you know, she's got a higher calling than worrying about her own personal safety. I mean, that's pretty clear. It shines through all the way through the story of Zoe, which makes, you know, anyone reading it feel incredibly humble, I have to say. But in any case, let's get back to the main event. I mean, she's heading back to Poland now. I think it's September 1943. So what's the mission? What's she going to do when she gets there?
Well, when she gets back, she's second in command to a woman called Emilia Malesa, who's running the overseas courier communication. So this is the land-based communication. So that's the sort of work she's been doing to Germany. But they've now got routes through France, through Switzerland, up through Sweden as well. They've got all these routes. And basically, land communication is really important, because much as you might want to send everything by radio, you can't send a map by radio. You can't send parts that have been collected by the resistance of V1 bombs, so the Allies to look at and analyse, or even microfilm can take hundreds and hundreds of pages. You just can't transmit that, or if it's too sensitive to put over the airwaves. So they have this massive organisation. It's called Farmstead Zagota. And so she is sent back to coordinate that with Emilia, her boss. But mainly now, they are, as we are moving towards 1944, everyone in Poland is praying for D-Day to happen, for the Allies to come back in. And they're making preparations to rise up, to liberate their own country. They know that when the Allies come from the West, they've also, of course, got on the Eastern Front, the Soviets are beginning to push back in the East. They want to liberate their own nation rather than, you know, they want to welcome the Red Army, which is likely to arrive first in Poland, of course, as equals to a free country, having set up their own government once more, rather than feel that they are historically indebted to anyone to liberating them. So she's come back to help organise the preparations for this action.
Okay, and getting to the events of March 1944, so 80 years ago, to this day, just lead me up to the sequence of events that results in her courier network in Poland being betrayed and lots of people arrested, and her, of course, in mortal danger once again.
This is, you know, this is one of the lowest moments. So she is sent back, and in her absence, they had replaced her as second in command with someone else, a man whose codename is Jarak. And he is Czechoslovak courier. He's been working for some time. He has been distrusted by various members of the team, but it tends to be, when you read the records, all these records thousands of them are kept. And it's things like people didn't like his handshake. That is not enough to convict someone. Or they think he's shifty, doesn't look them in the eye, and that seems a little bit more. But there's a lot of this. There's one guy, a Gorol, so it's a citizen of the mountains, and they have been very important in the resistance because they know the routes across the mountains to get people in and out. And he had been arrested, and he said the only person that could have betrayed him was this guy. Anyhow, he is then released. So they kind of let it drop. And when Zoe comes back, she meets him and she instinctively doesn't trust him, or so she says retrospectively anyhow. And of course, he betrays them and there is a massive roundup. I mean, when Zoe talks about it, she talks about it a bit like Napoleon, like the deluge, you know. I mean, it's massive. There is a coordinated series of arrests on the same evening. The first place they go to is a forgery cell. They arrest the forger and the man he's working with, the two women that own the place where they're working who help them, and two British officers who were getting, they'd escaped prisoners of war who are about to collect their papers. So they're all rounded up. And then they're very brutally interrogated. And it's, you know, it's a fractal. As soon as they get them, they get more information, they get more. I mean, I have to say, people weren't leaking easily. I mean, they were appallingly tortured and they held out as long as possible. But there is this mass roundup, and that's partly because they can, because Yarak's already been working there, they can pinpoint lots of people at the same time. Zoe is warned. She's been working with a woman called Hanker. Hanker receives a warning, a bit of paper stuffed into her keyhole, which just says Wanda is ill, which means, of course, Wanda has been arrested, rushes back to Zoe. And they have this frantic night. They don't know if there's curfew, so they can't leave, but they don't know if at any moment the Gestapo are going to bang on the door and arrest them. What they do have is a whole load of papers of transmits that they've been wiring over to the West. And Zoe has the record of these, which are hidden under the floorboards, but they think that's too dangerous. So they have this horrendous night where they are trying to get rid of these. She doesn't have a kitchen. She doesn't know how to burn them. They're trying to get them down the loo, but the plumbing in this old Warsaw apartment building isn't up to it, so they clog that up and too many flushing noises. Then they find a plate and they manage to burn some papers, but it catches in the breeze, a leaky old house, and so these papers are wafting around the room like cinders. It's this extraordinary moment. But they do manage to get rid of all the evidence, and in the morning they separate and go in different directions. And, you know, it's just appalling. So eventually works out there's over 70 women have been arrested. And we've met a number of these characters in the book. Some of them come to terrible ends. Some of them manage to get away using ingenuity and a lot of luck. And Zoe is one of those who manages to eventually get away. I won't tell you exactly the story, but yeah. So they have been pretty much decimated at this point, just that section of the Home Army.
Before we close, because there is another very important chapter in the Zoe story. I mean, I'm sure there's more than one, but the one in particular, of course, is the Warsaw Uprising. You've spoken, Claire, about how people in Poland and Zoe included were determined to free their own country before the Russians arrive. And it's a very controversial story, as we'll come on to. But I think we'll get you back to talk about that when the events are relevant, which will be in the summer. But before we leave, just give us a sense of how Zoe was seen by her contemporaries. I mean, I think she's decorated a number of times for courage, isn't she? There wasn't the equivalent of a Polish VC, but if there had been, or maybe there was, I mean, she certainly deserved it.
She got Poland's highest honour. So she got the Virtuti Militari many times. So that's Poland's highest award for valour. She got all, of course, the service medals, the war medals, all that sort of thing. She ended up with the Poland's highest honour, which is the Order of the White Eagle. And she was only the second woman in Polish history, and there's still only been two, who was promoted to general. So yes, I mean, she's very highly recognised. And in fact, SOE, I think it was Perkins, who's the head of SOE for the Balkans, he proposed her for the OBE, the British honour as well, but Britain declined because she was a Polish citizen serving Polish and the Polish government directly, not the British. So she didn't get a British honours. But yes, there is an archive in Torun, her hometown, which has got an immense amount of material, but also has some of her personal possessions. And there's this huge display thing with, I don't know, 20, 30 medals in there. It's absolutely extraordinary. I've never really seen the like, and I've been to a lot. And then among there, there's various other things that she still, you know, carried that were so important to her that she kept all her life. And one of those is her armband from the Warsaw Uprising. And you can just see, you know, there's still some blood on it.
Wow. Wow. And lastly, Claire, I mean, why do we know more about this story? I mean, how is it? I've never heard of her. Agent Zoe, have I heard of that before? Possibly, but I certainly don't know any of the details. And how did you come across it?
Well, that's a wonderful story as well. Two or three of my books ago, I wrote a book called The Spy Who Loved about the first woman to serve Britain as a special agent, directly serve Britain. She does have British honours, George Medal, OBE. And her name was Christina Skarbe, but she's better known as Christine Granville because she was Polish born, but she lived in Britain, the country she directly served for 6 years in the war afterwards, and took one of her code names, Christine Granville. And I was at an event I won't tell you what event, but anyhow, at the Polish embassy in London. And there was a lady, and there was a lot of people there, but there was one very old, very small lady there. And I went up, I thought, she looks interesting, chatted to her, and she was a veteran of the Warsaw Uprising. And she had done amazing work. Maybe I can tell you about that next time. Yeah, Hania Kosia. And she was absolutely fantastic. She told me all her stories, and she said, why are you here? And I said, I wrote about Christina Skelbeck. I said, oh, why did you write about her? Why didn't you write about Zoe? I was like, oh, who's Zoe? You know, if Christina Skelbeck's nothing, and if this woman thinks that she's nothing, and she had risked her life, you know, for 2 months in the occupation, she was only a teenager. Who was this Zoe then that's, you know, at the top of the hill? So I was right. We have to bring that story to light.
Wow. Great stuff, Claire. Thank you so much for joining us. We will hear the rest of Zoe's story and the story of the Warsaw Uprising in subsequent episodes. But thanks so much for coming on.
Really nice to join you.
Well, that was pretty amazing, wasn't it? Hearing the story of Agent Zoe. I've read about and written about an awful lot of episodes in the Second World War, but there aren't many that can beat that. So as we say, we'll get her back later on in the year. But do join us, of course, on Friday for our usual summary of what's happening in Ukraine. And we'll also be answering listeners' questions. And again, next Wednesday, when we'll be continuing the Battleground 44 series. Goodbye.